हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 71. Ardhikarna 12. The jivas are eternally conscious. Pritag upadesha dikaranam. Sutra reference 2-3, 26-29. Ardhikarna Prakashika. Here in this Ardhikarna, the Sutrakar proves that the jiva's nature is conscious, is consciousness, by disproving the Nyaya Vaisheshika's and Karma Mimamsa's viewpoint of, quote, jiva being unconscious, end quote. It is verified that consciousness can be neither obscured nor exposed by going away from the Lord. The consciousness becomes obscured, can be either, okay, obscured or exposed. Mm-hmm. By going away from the Lord, the consciousness becomes obscured, and by turning towards the Lord, the consciousness shines forth in its natural state. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, the jiva, a form of consciousness, is also conscious. This property of the jiva is not lost even in deep sleep, where he apparently seems to be unconscious. Footnote 40. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur refutes the concept that consciousness is an effect of matter. Viyogat sa punas tatra gachat yeva na samshayaha natasya punar avritir na muktir jnana lakshana. They say that when it dies, conscious life ceases to exist, and of this they have no doubt. They say there is no soul that can be reborn in this world or liberated from it by attaining spiritual knowledge. Right, so it's a category of thinking, right? Like
that. Right.
Yes.
So, just to clarify, the jiva has its own consciousness, means inherent consciousness, and then if coming here, then also, you know, somehow or other, there's an external consciousness. Is that right?
Well, the natural pure consciousness becomes covered. So one's still conscious, but it's just like, let's say you have a light.
Yes.
And the light is on its own, so you get that pure light. Otherwise, you see it through, like, let's say, colored glass. Mm-hmm. Right? So then it could be yellow glass, red glass, or, you know, some blue or something like this. And so it just, the consciousness becomes, the light becomes less and less. And then that's as you turn away from the Lord. As you turn back to the Lord, then it starts to be uncovered and come out.
It's one consciousness, basically.
It's one consciousness.
It's coming up. It's coming up in the discussion.
It's one consciousness. Like that. See, the principle is that when you're dealing with the topic, sometimes other aspects of the topic come up earlier, just depending upon the individuals that are there and how it's going. You see that in the school, right? That you have a topic, there's a natural flow. Or at least you've created what you think is an appropriate flow. Then someone will ask a topic that is, you know, maybe, you know, 2-3 weeks, a month, even a few months in advance. We are talking to you. I said we are talking to you, so it's not good if you are talking to someone else. Yeah, but then you're talking and all that kind of stuff. You just go over there and give, but you can listen. It's just like cooking. You can leave the room and still be thinking of the cooking, right? That's how you know when you have to go back to stir it. People that burn things and it doesn't come out good, when they leave the room, they don't remember the cooking. And later, oh, we're cooking, and then they run back. But it's a matter of consciousness. You're able to move and do things to still be fully conscious. So, things come up out of line. A question comes up. And so when the question comes up, then one naturally thinks, we're here. Yeah, it's a good question, but we're going to get to that after X amount of lessons. So we won't discuss it now. Then leaving that point, you go on with the lesson. Then when it comes to that point that they ask the question about, then the teacher's thinking, okay, now the students will get, inspired because now the questions come up and all that. But then when you get there, they couldn't care less. Because there's a moment for everything. And when that moment's there, that's when you deal with it. We see when Vishwamitra was training Ram and Lakshman, as they would, be moving, through the forest and staying in the ashrams and doing that, then at night they would, ask questions about the stars, and so he would explain astrology. During the day they would ask about this, he would explain that. He wouldn't go, well, we'll do that after. In a sense, so it's a very important point, is that the idea that yes, it will, it could be dealt with now, but it is dealt with after, but you give an indication already. It's not a bad thing. And if it does come up as a discussion, you discuss it at that point. Then when you get to the point, then they're already understand it. Now it's a matter of being more convinced or some final detail and all this. But this idea is that it has to go. This other time doesn't necessarily work very good. Right? So that's the point. Okay. Now we will consider these two materialistic philosophies. First, we will look at materialism in a general way. Right? Because this materialism is general for all materialists, whether they're Vedic or not. Right? It'll always apply in the principle. In the detail, you might find some difference. But in any case, it's all like they all think it comes from matter. The Vedic one, then they'll understand that the soul will go on to another body. But they still consider consciousness has come from matter because everything comes from pradhan. Right? Does that make sense? That's all. It means anything except Vaishnavism, life comes from matter. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So you can talk about them in the generic way, and it can be applied to any of the Vedic ones, anything that's not Vedic, the ancient, the modern, anything. They'll all have the same principles, because you're dealing with the same modes.
Yes.
Right? It's not that in the Vedic you're dealing with the three modes, and then in the contemporary you're dealing with some other modes. Right? It doesn't work like that. All varieties of materialism say this: inert matter exists, conscious life exists, and everything is created from inert matter. Right? Conscious life does not exist before inert matter. Philosophies that teach about God are a useless waste of time. Right? So, in other words, the conscious entity exists, matter exists. Everything is made from matter. That means the consciousness has come from matter.
Yes.
It's just that's their logic. And so therefore trying to teach about God and that he's created all this and that doesn't really matter. Because you see, in all these philosophies, God is not that important. Not that they don't accept that he's there, but he's not important in the context.
Can you summarize? It is also considered that God is like matter.
That, I don't know if they'll necessarily take it that far, but many will take it, it's a construct of our consciousness. So in other words, we take our thoughts and feelings and all that and project that onto a being that we would label as God. I think it's called, is that anthropomorphism or something? It means that we take human and project it on God.
Yeah.
That's anthropomorphism. Yeah. So many will say there's no God. We just come up with that idea because we're a person and we have relationships. So then we think that there should be that ideal great person. And so there's no need. But even we see is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that even the smart materialists, they'll go with the concept that there's a God. Whether they believe or not, whether they have faith or not, but if people do have faith in God, it's just one more item to make sure that people follow the rules, the social rules.
Yes, yes.
Because You know, you can be in your house, do any old nonsense, but if God's there, he can see, so even there you'll try to behave yourself. And then there's the point is, if there is no God and you thought there was a God, life was improved anyway, right? Because the social quality of life was improved.
Yes.
So there's no loss,
yes.
Right? And if there, you know, so if there's no God, then you don't lose anything,
mm-hmm.
right, after death.
Yes.
Now, let's say there is a God. Just if there happens to be, if you've respected him, then if after death you have, then that's going to work out better for you. Right? So you see from both in the present and in the future, if there's a understanding that there may be a God, it works for both. So the materialists have no problem, and smart materialists have no problem in accepting God. If they're self-centered and it's just about themselves, then they may not see the importance, but if there's a concept of, you know, social interaction and community, then the concept of there being God is always going to be helpful. Like that. You understand? But you can see is that it's not just total atheism that there's no, it's this one that they don't really care. You know what I'm saying? So it's not important. You know, it's a waste of time. You don't need to teach about God and that. He's there, he's not there. They don't get more than that. You know what I'm saying? I would say these days Santa gets more glorification for his, you know, omniscience. Right? You know, because he knows when you're sleeping, he knows when you're awake, he knows when you've been good or bad. You know, all this kind of stuff. No? You know, parents will propagate it just to keep their kids in line and stuff like that. Yeah. If someone talks about God, he is talking about a being who exists only in his imagination. If God exists, one should search to find a higher God. If any God exists, one should search to find a higher, quote-unquote, God that controls that God. Right? Because they're working on time and space. Everything here has its creation. So they apply that also then to God. Because if God's there, then he created who created him. But he's not material. He's beyond the material. So he doesn't work like that. He's outside. Because we'll say it's an endless loop. But that endless loop is within materialism. When you step out of materialism, you have unlimited. There's no endless loop. Right? God's existence has never been proved, right? Of course, it's never been disproved. But in every country and province are religious books describing God and describing the soul's residence in the spiritual world. These books are wild imaginations of various rascals. They do not describe anything that truly exists. Therefore, words, self, Atma, and consciousness, Chaitanya, refer only to certain aspects of matter. Right? So materialists will always be seeing in this way. So we see here's we're getting the speaking of the ones who are more gross, who are, you know, atheistic. But then you have those ones that they don't really care.
Yes.
Right?
Same philosophy.
Sorry?
Same philosophy.
Same philosophy. It's just, you know, they're just a little lighter on, okay, it's not total waste. It helps in the social construct like that. And, you know, and, yeah. Yes?
It seems that because the consciousness is material, it's a natural logic. Then it comes from metta.
Yes. That's the point he's pointed. That point is matter exists, consciousness exists.
Yeah.
Everything's made of matter, therefore consciousness is made of matter.
Yeah.
It's that's their yes.
Because we talk about Krishna consciousness, which they can conceive of.
No. Because they don't understand consciousness is there before matter. Matter is unconscious by its nature.
Right.
And the soul, you know, is conscious by nature.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand it's two different things. They think the matter itself came to life. That's why you have all these themes that, you know, you make the machines and then they become so smart they take over.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because we're thinking consciousness comes from matter or from intelligence or something. So it's not an uncommon point. I mean, they can't use it too much. You know, how often can you have a movie that comes out like that? But the point is you know, because once that's done, it's kind of done, and then you have to think of something else.
Yeah.
You know, but it's it's based on that because they don't know how this comes about. They have no idea how life comes about. It means you even see in your basic religious texts in the West, God took some dirt, and then from that fashioned man. But it doesn't mention about the consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? So even there where there is faith in God, but there's not an actually understanding how a consciousness comes from. Like that. So they don't actually know the difference, because they can't explain what's the soul. Body they can explain, it's made out of matter, but then even there they'll only get earth, fire, water, air. Nobody gets either. Like that. So they'll get that, and then there's consciousness, there's the soul, but is the soul the body? Is the soul the subtle body? Is the soul something else? That cannot be explained. You know, some different groups or individuals may have more of an explanation or less, but basically, as long as you have faith in God, that's good enough. You know, they don't think past that, and it'll work for them. But with that as a philosophy, then you can see it's just a step to the atheistic, where everybody's made from matter, and matter's so therefore consciousness comes from matter. So it's just natural, because there's just no knowledge of the soul. Because God is conscious, therefore whatever emanates from it is conscious. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, because he's everything, that therefore if there's conscious, there's also unconscious. But for God and the living entities and the internal potency, who are all conscious, there's no need of the external energy. It's just one of the energies. Right? So it exists, but it doesn't matter. Does that make sense? You know, so... Therefore, then your whole relationship and interaction with God and his eternal associates doesn't depend upon matter. Right? So only when the living entity turns from God, the only place that you don't have conscious living entities is in the unconscious external energy. So then those living entities being conscious but don't want to be conscious of God, then they are placed within that external energy and deal with the external. Because they're interested in secondary. The difficulty is in the spiritual world, all the secondary is all conscious. And so they, being God conscious, they don't want to be dealt with in a non-God conscious way. Right? So then by coming to the material world, then you have unconscious matter, which makes up all the secondary aspects. And being unconscious, it just doesn't care. Right? There's no disturbance. So one can try to enjoy the externals of the material energy, and it won't disturb. But because that's not the nature, and because you're dealing with action and reaction, it's natural that good work gets good reaction and bad work gets bad reaction. And so therefore, even though the nature is unconscious, the living entities who are controlling it are conscious. Right? And ultimately then Krishna is conscious. Therefore then... Does that make sense? Yeah.
They taught us about the soul at university.
Oh, okay.
In philosophy.
Okay.
There's some Greek philosophers like Descartes and stuff that...
So they would think about that.
Yeah, we had to write essays on it. Is there a soul in there? Where did it come from?
Yeah. But that's just their philosophy. As far as what you only have to know the information about that philosophy and write on it. But whether you believe that or not, that's not part of the course. Yeah. Like that. Whether the teacher believes or not.
Yeah, you can easily just have an argument there's not, and you can provide the ones that say there's not. And that's also valid.
Yeah. But the point is they're not trying to, they're only teaching you knowledge, and it happens to be these Greek philosophers think like this, these other guys think that. So if we're studying the Greek philosophers in this group, they're going to be talking about the soul, so you write about that.
Yeah.
But as soon as you're doing a paper on something else, then it could be the opposite. Mm. So there's no standard like that. So it's not that there's not elements that are there, but even they accept the soul, we see this whole point still applies, that they think that the soul has come from matter. Mm. You know, and so is that the soul, so whether just we're the body and we become conscious, it's matter that's become conscious.
Yeah.
You know, like this. Whether you accept there's a soul or not. So the body that is conscious, we would say that's the soul. So the consciousness is the soul. You know, you can have all kinds of variety of, what do you call it? Speculation. Yeah. So there's no shortage of that kind of thing. So it still applies. They still will think like that. And even like we said, those who have faith in God, they still are thinking that consciousness comes from matter. So they may not say it's useless to think about God, but it's as far as practical stuff goes, generally you don't have to worry about God. You know? Does that make sense? Your day-to-day life, you're making money, you're doing your job, you don't have to bring God into it. You know, don't do something bad. But as far as being successful in your material life, you don't actually require God. You know what I'm saying?
Like that's a moral compass or something.
Yeah, it's like that. It's a moral compass and like this. And so that's, and then a few people may dedicate themselves more to it, which is also okay. You know, but they have to be careful. They can't talk too much about it to, you know, the common people. Right? Because, you know, it's how much they're interested in. And if the, you know, the people are intellectual, then you definitely don't talk to them. Right? Like there's a good chance that there is not any kind of, you know, serious like monastery or anything within, you know, a stone's throw of, what is it? How you say Sorbonne?
Sorbonne, yes.
Yeah, there's not.
No.
You know, just the vibes that are there would, you know, the walls would crumble or something. You know? Yes.
Can I ask a question about the, when we, it's like clone or take slips of a plant.
But didn't we discuss this?
Yeah, but it's to do with this as well, because if consciousness is in every atom, every cell, when one separates...
No, but why are we saying consciousness is in every cell? Where did that come from?
Paramatma.
Okay, he's in every cell.
Yeah. So when,
but why does he need to be in every cell? He can be.
But if a slip is still alive when you take it from a plant,
that's because another soul goes in there.
Yeah, but when it goes in,
yeah.
Does it go in immediately?
But what does it matter?
Because it's still alive. No, the ingredients are still alive in the body and in the plant body. I mean, so is that because of consciousness or because the jiva's already gone in? Is that a weird question?
No, the point is what's the purpose of the question? Because see, is here, there's a doubt. You're thinking that the matter itself is what's conscious. But all that is the jivas are conscious. The body of the plant's not. Another living entity goes in there, then it will continue alive. Hmm. Because you're saying it's still alive, but is it? You know what I'm saying? You take a vegetable, let's say you take a cauliflower, you cut it off the plant. Then for some time you call it fresh. You know, it's still, you know, vibrant and living and all this, but it's dead. You know what I'm saying? So don't mistake freshness with life.
No, I'm just thinking of like roses or something like that, you know, when you plant them. Like, you can take, what's the word? You take slips of cuttings, yeah.
Yeah, but it just means that is a form to which Manu mentions that there's four ways that living entities can take birth. So one of them is through, you know, slips and cuttings and all that kind of stuff. Like a potato, you just cut it up into pieces and plant those pieces and you get potatoes. So it just means you have one potato, there's one soul living in it. You cut it up into four pieces, now there's four living there. Now, which piece the original one is in, that you can't say, you know. Or if the original one's still there, maybe cutting it up, then he dies, and then four other ones come in.
Or maybe there's two in one.
Yeah, two, yeah, yeah, like that. Hey, I got it, I got it. You know what I'm saying? So the point is, in what way will this help you progress in Krishna consciousness? You know what I'm saying? That's the thing to see. Because in everything we're doing, as Prahlad Maharaj said, is that any aspect of the that you're dealing with in philosophy and culture and all these things, it becomes useful in its connection to Krishna. Right? Otherwise, the mind can think of unlimited permeations and permutations and all this, or probably permutations is the better word, of whatever you're dealing with to just create doubt. Right? Because doubt is coming from the intelligence. So it means intelligence is working. So that's a good thing. You can know that you have some intelligence that's functional. Right? But then there's the proper, then there's misapprehension and proper apprehension. So the proper is only actually understood when it's connected to Krishna. Otherwise, it's actually misapprehension. Even though it may be, according to the facts, it may work, and it may, you know, socially and economically get you results. But Krishna consciousness means you have to connect it to Krishna. So then one should always see is how this will help you in Krishna consciousness. And there may be a point, yes. But the thing is what does it matter? You know what I'm saying? For you, you're the one soul in the body that you have to worry about. Right? How you say? You don't have to worry about the tapes. Does that make sense? No? You don't know that one? Me tapes are barking? No? Too far north. You don't have to worry about all the, you know, how say the acidophilus and all those other guys that are there floating around inside. You don't have to worry about that. Right? You're the one that has to be conscious and become God conscious. Them becoming conscious and becoming God conscious, that's their problem. By you chanting and always being engaged in spiritual activities, that sound vibration, they'll get benefit. So just sitting there and chanting, you are preaching to, you know, possibly millions of living entities. Not that they know that you're preaching to them, but it doesn't matter. It's you, the soul, are the one that you have to worry about. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like that. So just know it's one of the ways life is, because you can't take a cutting from any tree and it'll work. Only specific trees. So who defines that? Right? Not botanists. Right? Krishna's defined that. Is that okay? Yeah? Yes.
Krishna also tells the same thing. He described in the second chapter about the soul, about 20 verses. Different analysis of that. At the end he tells some describe the soul as amazing, some see as amazing, some hear as amazing. But some people after hearing, they don't understand.
Stand it all, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So it's just a matter of you as an individual, how you can become God conscious, that's what you have to worry about. So you don't have to worry about, you know, the other things. It's just that there's laws that if you deal in this way, it'll work. You know, it's like you say there, rose cutting, you take the cutting, then you have to deal with it immediately. Right? But let's say you have the frangipani tree. You take a cutting from that, it can sit around for a few days before you even plant it. You know what I'm saying? It's just, but those laws are made by Krishna, not by us. So all we have to know is that if it's alive, there's a soul there. And if it's not alive, there's no soul. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's like a like jazz. Right? No? Music's not good, there's no soul, right? Yeah? Yeah. Okay, so continuing with our, let's see, with our atheists and all that. Self and consciousness are created only by a variety of forward, anuloma, or backward, viloma, interactions. Samyoga of material elements, jara tattva. When the interactions are forward, there's creation of self and consciousness. When the interactions are backward, self and consciousness are again merged into matter. So, see, they even come up with their philosophies on these things. On how it works, is forward or backwards. But, you know, yeah. A self's taking birth again and again in different forms of reincarnation is not possible. So here you're taking ones that don't believe at all.
Yes.
Like that. Attaining liberation from matter by learning the truth about Brahman is not possible either. Because the self is not different from matter. Right? So you can't get liberated from matter because you are matter. You know, are you saying? You know, it's like the political things that they're saying, that this life matters or that life matters. Or, yeah. The self cannot become liberated from matter. Therefore, matter is the ultimate reality. Right? You saw all the philosophies. Pradhan is the ultimate reality. Not beyond that. There's no God beyond that. All existence is only a variety of aspects of matter. All atheists accept these ideas. Right? So these may be more articulated than some atheists. You know? But the point is this is... One group of atheists claims that each person's attainment of material pleasure is for him the goal of life. Another group of atheists, understanding that material pleasure is temporary and pathetic, searches after the happiness of nirvana, cessation of material existence. Right? So then you bring in the Buddhists and all that. Or any of these nihilists, kind of like that, who's trying to get rid of everything. The philosophy of materialism is unnatural and unscientific. It is unnatural because every nature has a cause. To assume that matter is eternal and is the cause of consciousness, which appears only as the byproduct of matter is very illogical. The presence of causes and effects is natural in the world of gross matter, right? So that's an important point, in the world of gross matter. So since you're dealing with gross matter, there's cause and effect. When you go beyond in the spiritual, you don't have that. But within the world of gross matter, you do. Without causes and effects, the material world would not be as it is. Right? Because otherwise, how do you make money? Right? Because of cause and effect. You do something and it gives an effect. Right? So nothing will go on without cause and effect. But the spiritual world is not based on cause and effect. You know, transformation is there, but nothing stops to exist. It's just variety is there for the pleasure of the Lord. So, the philosophy of materialism is unscientific because consciousness has the power to manipulate and control inert matter. Therefore, the idea that consciousness is merely a byproduct of matter is fiercely opposed to true scientific thinking. Right? Because otherwise, if we're coming from matter, matter would control us. But we're controlling matter. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. This of cause and effect. Can we say that in the material world you have causes and effects? That means that particular cause transforms into the effect.
Depends on the philosophy. In Buddhism, it transforms into the effect. But that's their idea. The cause no longer exists. But others might accept that the cause still exists. You know, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking, you know, generic, that all the atheistic schools will accept. Then beyond this, then they might have differences.
So then can you say that the spiritual world is about Satkaryavad?
Spiritual world is about Satkaryavad. You can, but generally we are using Satkaryavad in connection with the living entity in the material world and Krishna. When you're talking about the Sambandha Tattva, of Chitta Chit Ishwara, then you use Satkaryavad. In the spiritual world, you don't need to use Satkaryavad. Does that make sense? Just like we have a thermometer, right? For taking a temperature. When do we use the thermometer? What? Yes, but I'm saying when. What's the condition?
When
we're sick. Now let's say I have a room full of healthy people, like totally healthy people. Do we need a thermometer? I mean, you could stick it in their mouth and get a reading. But the whole point is why would you? So Satkaryavad is used within the material context to liberate us from. But once we come to that platform, remember, Krishna said, then you're supposed to offer that knowledge to Krishna. And then you're functioning beyond that in attachment to Krishna. So at that point, you don't need to think like that.
Right. So, can we say that the difference between spirituality and materialism, it's about the view of consciousness that we get?
Yeah, you could say view of consciousness. Yeah, view of consciousness. And so this origin in the supreme rather than in material nature. Yeah.
Yes, and the process of spiritual life is to purify the consciousness.
Yes.
And bring them to the spiritual
life. Yes. Yes, but that will bring us up to that point. Then there's beyond that. Is that the one's so in this one you're conscious, so that means you have knowledge and you're conscious.
Yes.
But then you're going beyond that, you're conscious of the relationship with the Lord.
Yes.
You know, the sweetness of
yes.
the Lord, all these qualities of the Lord. And then you're acting within the context of bhakti.
Yes. Yes.
So that's why bhakti is beyond jnana yoga. But jnana, we call it jnana yoga if it's engaged in bhakti.
Yes.
But the point is the jnana element, then coming to the liberated state is no longer necessary.
Mm.
Right? It doesn't mean that knowledge is not there. They have knowledge of rasa and all these things. But you don't require this this knowledge important for functioning in and getting freed from the material world.
Mm-hmm.
With that. Because they're already on the transcendental platform.
Mm.
Does that make sense? So, their intelligence is used in relationship with the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we were meaning when we were discussing yesterday, following bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
You just, you follow that. What's going to cultivate and bring out bhakti, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's not based on material knowledge. It's a higher knowledge.
But, for example, presenting Krishna consciousness to non-devotee. So very often we use this aspect of consciousness.
No problem. Yeah, no, it's fine. And what I'm just talking about is our own cultivation.
Yes, yes, yes.
But for preaching, you have to work at a level that is there. So if they don't even understand that consciousness is really there, then it's discussed. Like, you see so much of the time, like in Upanishads, the five levels of consciousness is a very major platform of discussion. Prabhupada brings it up all the time.
Yes.
So you're trying to make them aware that they're conscious, and then trying to elevate the conscious from just the senses up to being Krishna conscious.
Yes, yes.
So yes, consciousness is a very major aspect of preaching when you're using these technical aspects, when you're using jnana.
Yes. And it is related, chit means consciousness and
yes.
knowledge.
Yes, yes, yes. Because sat, we exist eternally, but then chit, you have to be conscious.
Yes.
Then being conscious, then we have to try to please Krishna. That's the devotion. That's
yes.
the ananda. So, yeah. Okay. Yes?
I think Srila Rupa Goswami in Nectar of Devotion, he mentions that up to level of Raghunath Sadhana, the knowledge is very much engaged.
Yes, yes.
But then on that level, it's not.
It's not. Because the knowledge is to get you to a particular platform. And if you're already at that platform, you don't need to. It's not that the knowledge is useless. You know, that's how we'll look at it. But it's that it's useful, but just you don't need it. It's just like you're in the kitchen and you're going to slice potatoes. Right? You don't need a grater. So does that mean that the grater is useless? And therefore you have to sit there and be grumbling about the uselessness of the grater and this and that. And You know, you don't want anybody in the kitchen bringing up about the grater, and you know, you don't have to do that. You just do what you're doing. So, but if someone else needs to use the grater, then it's there. That's why you see that these liberated souls, they can come and preach about karma yoga and jnana yoga so easily, because it's necessary for that soul. Because if you're relating to a living entity according to their view, right, then it's not a problem. Because you're only, for them, you're only still only interacting with the, you know, the Krishna and the living entity. Right? Because the conditioning is what? It's not the living entity, right? We say we're not our conditioning. Right? So that means that conditioning has to be, you know, there. Otherwise, why is it existing? So that's Krishna, that's the universal form. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's the material form of Krishna.
Yeah.
So, for those who always see everything in connection with Krishna, they're only interacting with Krishna. Mm. But it's being done for the benefit of the soul. The soul identifies, let's say, as a doctor. So you're dealing with them as a doctor. But actually, the doctorness and the doctorhood are Krishna. But who's identifying as the doctor is the soul. And the body's just the body. You know, it's a body that may be useful for being a doctor. Like that, right? You know, if a guy has 10 thumbs, you know, you might not want to, you know, go too far in the medical practice. Right? Does that make sense? How you say, unless you're in the shiatsu, right? Because it's always with the thumb that they get you. So this guy's got 10 thumbs, you know. Yeah. You might avoid that doctor also. Is that?
Yeah.
So, for them, there's never a problem. They don't have a problem dealing with that particular consciousness. Because it's Krishna. But it's not Krishna the person. It's Krishna his energies. But he's the energetic. And so that it'll remind of the original. So they can always be Krishna conscious. At the same time as they can deal with the living entity according to that nature. Right? Just like Krishna's money, you deal with money in the appropriate way, how money likes to be dealt with. Right? You take the money, you protect it, then you have it. Does that make sense? Then you invest it in these things, then it grows. So that's the appropriate way to deal with it. Right? Well, if you deal in a different way, then it goes away. Right? And then you see it in connection to Krishna, then, because money is actually Lakshmi, so Lakshmi being pleased, then things develop. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So, one's always dealing with Krishna, so one can always be Krishna conscious in that dealings. You just have to choose which aspect. You know, you have to do that anyway. People who are successful are doing that anyway. They just don't know this aspect of the science. You know what I'm saying? Like you're talking, let's say, with a... how do you say it? Like with a gunda. Right? Now, amongst gundas, you see, there's always that underlying thing of there's always a hierarchy, right? You know, so then that means in a hierarchy there has to be respect. There has to be duties, there has to be respect. So that means basically any gunda, you know, it means this organized crime kind of thing, you can always talk on these points. Because their whole organization runs because of that. And then you can show how they're running like that, the universe is running like that, so who's the big boss? You know? It means, and even they have to work within certain confines. They can't go outside of that if they want to be successful. So the point is you're always talking about Krishna's qualities. Is that? Yeah. So that's why it's not difficult for them to preach. That's why it says Uttamadikar, you can't defeat them in an argument, because they see things as they are. If you see Krishna, then you understand it as it is. You see Krishna, you see the soul, you see the material energy. But we get deluded by our concepts of what is the soul, what is Krishna, what is the material energy, and how we would like it to be. So then we may catch certain aspects of the philosophy very nicely, and certain aspects may be difficult for us. So someone might give us difficult problem in that area that we're weak in. In an area we're strong, then we'll do very nicely, but in an area we're weak. But they don't, that the liberated soul has no weakness. That's why you can't defeat them. So it's not about how intelligent you are and this and that, because even you're super intelligent doesn't mean that you're not an illusion. You're not making mistakes. So they don't make mistakes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because everything's being seen connected to Krishna. Where's the mistake? Right? Since the material world, its purpose is to become God conscious, they're God conscious. There can't be any mistake. Is that okay?
We saw earlier one of the Adhikarans where it mentioned that the jiva is knowledge, and here we are saying that the jiva is consciousness.
Is there a problem between knowledge and consciousness?
No, so that's what is the question.
If you're conscious, you have knowledge.
Okay, so that's what is my question. If consciousness is knowledge, then why are the Adhikarans being separated like that? Because it's one.
Why are they separated? Because people separate them. People see them in a separate way. See, what are you dealing with here? Vedanta Sutra is dealing with what? Is it just presenting the Vaishnava philosophy for the devotees?
No.
So it's dealing with the materialists, and different materialists see different things. Some see knowledge, not conscious. Some see conscious, not knowledge. Some see both. Some see none. Right? That's cool. No one has ever seen human consciousness created from dull material elements. Only fools believe this will ever happen. Right? They say it doesn't exist, they've never seen, but you've never seen dull matter become conscious. You know, human consciousness. It's not seen. So if we're going to go by, we haven't, you know, nothing proves that there's God, therefore then we reject. Nothing's proved this point either. So that's the thing, they're fools. They accept stuff that's not really acceptable. In the book I hold in my hand, a history book describing 3,000 years of human history, no one has ever seen a human being spontaneously manifested from inert matter. Like you're walking down the path and suddenly the rock just turns into a human or something like that. Then in the course of all those years, at least one human being would have been spontaneously manifested from inert matter, right? He's talking about so many, something would have. You know, of course, maybe if you're following the thing that parents are telling the child they found them under a rock or something, but they didn't say that they were a rock, you know? Okay. So this whole point is, you don't have any example. Not even one. Thousands of years, you know, trillions and trillions of living entities like that, and never. It just doesn't happen. So, yeah. Otherwise it'd be a problem, right? The farmers, they set up their fences, and then after a while the fences become conscious and move somewhere else, you know. So if you have that problem, then behind the fence on your side, you want to put thorns. So they don't move towards they move towards your neighbor's land. And then you get more land. Yeah, so, yeah. It's a science. So. Summary of Adhikarna 12. Vishaya, in the Prashna Upanishad 4.9, it is said, Eshahi Drishta, the soul is the person who sees. Shamshaya. Is the consciousness that soul possesses eternal or not? Right? So their doubt. Then their explanation. The soul is by nature unconscious. It is like a stone. Consciousness only arises when the soul comes in contact with the mind. Right? So where the mind comes from, what causes that? So it just, you know, it just causes unlimited problems. This is seen in the scriptural statement, I slept happily. I was not conscious of anything. The statement shows that consciousness is not an inherent quality of the soul, but rather is attained by contact with something else. It is like iron and fire. Right? So they'll use the Vedic examples, but this is misapprehension. Right? It means there's proper apprehension, misapprehension, then there's doubt. Right? Then you have sleep. What's the last one? Oh, there's and one more. So here that they're using the Vedic examples, but they're using them inappropriately. When placed in fire, an iron rod gradually assumes the qualities of fire. If it were an inherent quality of the soul, then consciousness would not be lost in deep sleep. Right? But as it pointed out, it's still not completely lost. Otherwise, how are you aware that I slept? The point is I slept peacefully. Means you're conscious. Otherwise, how do you know? Otherwise, you come in contact with the mind, however that's happening, and then you'd be aware of now. You wouldn't be aware of the sleep. You know, it would be like, oh, I slept. Right? Because you're not there. But you're aware that you slept. And you're aware that you were in deep sleep. So that means you're conscious. And we also know that, you know, super souls involved, all these things.
So, right, for them, the consciousness and mind are quite similar.
They're basically taking like that. They're taking the mind as the main. So it's all these difficulties come up. As soon as you speculate, you can come up with unlimited varieties of nonsense.
Yes.
Right? They'll all fit into categories.
Yes.
Like that. But yeah. Siddhanta, the Sutrakar gives the conclusion as follows. Sutra 2326. Pitag Upadeshat. Pitak, separate, Upadeshat, because of the teaching. Consciousness in the jiva is eternal because of teachings in the scriptures, other than the statement that the Atma is a seer. Like you say he's seeing, but then there's other statements also. There's not just that statement. Sutta Vakashika. The Sutrakar proves with the help of appropriate examples that the jiva's consciousness is eternal. However, it is in either of the two states. One, covered due to ignoring the Lord, or two, uncovered. Right? In other words, what do you call it? We have it around here somewhere. Throat lozenge thing. No, we have a whole bunch. No one uses them anymore. They all. It's just down to the menthol, and so nobody likes those. So.
We don't want to be menthol.
Yeah.
We are enough.
Yeah, we're already menthol enough.
No need more.
Or two, uncovered by acknowledging the Lord, right? In other words, conditional or constitutional. By the process of bhakti alone, the covered consciousness becomes uncovered, right? Because only bhakti, all these other schools, none of them can uncover the consciousness. You might bring it up to the mode of goodness, but they can't actually bring it to pure goodness. Like that. So someone in goodness can relate to the concepts of pure goodness. But there still be a mix. So it depends. If they're not interested, then they will continue with that mix. If they're sincere, then that will be purified and it will become to pure goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you see Krishna's talking about these jnanis and the bhaktas. Then, as far as situation goes, basically they're similar. They're both transcendentally situated. And they're both detached from the material world. Mm-hmm. But one is doing it by mechanics and the other is doing it naturally through bhakti.
Yes.
So they're both glorious in that way. But of the two, the bhakti is higher. Okay, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura explains the five categories of consciousness. Vrajanath. To what different stages of life do the souls imprisoned by Maya pass? Babaji. The souls imprisoned by Maya in a gross material body pass through five stages of existence. They are Achadita Chaitana, covered consciousness, Shadi Kuchita Chaitana, retracted consciousness, the Mukulita Chaitana, budding consciousness, Vikachita Chaitana, blossoming consciousness, and Purna Vikachita Chaitana, fully blossomed consciousness. Vrajana. Which souls are in the stage of uncovered consciousness?
Covered consciousness.
Oh, covered. Yeah, I was thinking, why would he start that? Babaji, the souls who reside in the bodies of trees, grass, and stones are in the stage of covered consciousness. They are close to being unconscious. Forgetting that they are servants of Krishna, they have entered deeply into the realm of matter. They have no understanding of spirit. All they know is the six changes of material life. Right? So the birth, growth, maintenance, that's all that they are aware of. This is the lowest depth to which the soul can fall. Ahalya, the Yamalarjuna trees, and the seven tall trees are some examples the Puranas give of souls in this stage of existence. Great offenses push souls into that state, and Lord Krishna's mercy delivers them. Right? So we see in all of them some offenses there they became, and then from there, then they, by Krishna's grace, then they come to the transcendental state. Vrajanath. Mm-hmm. Which souls are in the stage of retracted consciousness? Babaji, animals, birds, snakes, fish, other water creatures, worms, and insects are examples of the beings with retracted consciousness. The beings with covered consciousness exist on the verge of being unconscious. The beings with retracted consciousness have their consciousness a little opened. That consciousness is directed towards eating, sleeping, fearing, and bustling to and fro to fulfill a host of desires. Arguing with others over property claims, and anger when someone is wronged. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's, you know, what they do. You know, because we'll say, no, but these are very noble points. You know, something's been wronged, but the animals are doing that. Right? You stepped on their property. They're barking. However, that consciousness remains unaware of the existence of a world beyond the circle of matter. Right, so they can't tell that there's anything beyond just what's going on in their life. Right, so the ones are only can tell that there's six transformations in the life. That's all. These ones have that and the eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Right? But they can't tell what's beyond that. So that's why we're always saying that animals, that's animal consciousness.
So this is a materialistic consciousness.
Yes. Yes. Monkeys may be mischievous. They give some thought to understanding the way things work by thinking this will happen and that will not happen. May plan for the future and may show signs of gratefulness and other like feelings. Some animals have knowledge of the different properties of various objects. However, the animals, do not search for God. Right, so they may be various stages that they can tell different things and cause and effect and all these things, but they won't see beyond matter.
Yes.
Therefore, their consciousness is said to be retracted. That is there, but it's retracted back from that. In the scriptures, it is said that the great devotee Bharata took birth as a deer, and in that condition he is fully aware of the holy names of the Supreme Lord. However, Bharata was a special case. In general, animals do not have spiritual knowledge. Because of offenses, Bharata and Riga became animals. But then, by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, they again attained an auspicious condition of life. Right? So, It's always important to note that the exception proves the rule, doesn't disprove it. Right. Vrajana, which souls are in the stage of budding consciousness? Well, this was the next. Retracted, budding, okay. Then blossoming, and then fully blossomed, okay. Budding. Babaji, conditioned souls in human bodies display three stages of consciousness. Budding consciousness, blossoming consciousness, and fully blossomed consciousness. So human beings, that's why it said it's special, because they can work with these three. The animals and all that, in other words, the moving living entities are working in the second level. The non-moving are working in the first. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty with, let's say, why people have a difficulty with a couch potato, because they're in the lowest level of consciousness. They don't move. They're, yeah.
They can sleep happily.
Yes, yes. Budding consciousness, blossoming consciousness, and fully blossomed consciousness. Oh, I had that. There are five kinds of human beings. Immoral people, atheists who follow moral principles, people who believe in God and follow moral principles, people engaged in practical devotional service, sadhana bhakti, and people engaged in loving devotional service, bhava bhakti. Right, so you have these within that, then they'll have those levels. So in any case, it's always from the point of budding, but it doesn't mean that they can't take the consciousness lower, right? And only be aware. So that's why it's a waste, because they have a higher level of consciousness, but they're only using it like the animals. That's a waste.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Thus, the categories are people who, because of ignorance or because of improper knowledge, become atheists. The immoral people, the moral atheists, the moral people who have a little faith in God, the people who believe in God, the people who, following the rules of the scriptures, engage in sadhana bhakti, devotional service and practice, and the people who have attained love for God, and thus engage in bhava bhakti. The immoral people and the two kinds of atheists are situated in the stage of budding consciousness. The people who believe in God and the people engaged in sadhana bhakti are situated in the stage of blossoming consciousness. That's why you see people who are, let's say, religious, they don't know about sadhana bhakti, but they believe in God, have that faith and all that. You have some platform to discuss. Like that. Unless they're so absorbed in the secondary attributes of their religious process that they can't see, you know, they can't tell the difference between secondary and primary, then it may be a problem to talk to them. Yeah. Because you see in all these levels, there's different, within one, there's various levels.
In marriage, in each level, there is possibility to change also.
For humans, yes. For the animals,
yeah,
no.
Yeah.
Means the animal, by being engaged in devotional activities, then it's not that you're going to walk in one day and then, you know, you're going to walk into the living room and your dog's sitting there, you know, chanting Gita shlokas or something. Right? But it is that because of the exposure, devotional service, then they'll take birth as humans. Then they can continue with that Sukriti. Right?
Yeah. So,
yes.
Maharaj, now then within those three levels, there are five levels of consciousness, Anamaya and like that. Is that what
yes, yes. So that's what I was saying, is that the human, that's why we say human life, because the human being has the blossoming consciousness. And human life starts at Manamoy.
Right.
So if you're using your consciousness on those lower levels, then you're using a level of consciousness lower than what you have the ability to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why it's a waste. For the animals, they're fully engaging themselves according to their ability. Right? So from that angle, it's not a waste. It's a waste that the soul is in that body, but the point is it's not a waste. They don't waste their time.
Yes.
Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. But the human being who's using his consciousness on the level of living entities in the, you know, how you say it, what was it? The what was it? Retracted? What was below retracted?
Covered.
Covered. You know, and working in there, then that's a waste of time.
Prabhupada explains human beings actually begins in one ashram.
Yes.
Below that is
Chandra. Because you're accepting God's laws. So therefore it's considered theistic moralism. That's why he said belief in God with moralism. Right? Because we're talking here of, you know, your general kind of natural, I mean, yeah, you say pure stages. You can have that you believe in God and are immoral. But that doesn't work very well. You know, because you can't be totally immoral and you can't be totally God-conscious. You know, so that would be the natural explanation. You can get so many combinations.
So below Varanashram, human beings are not really human beings.
No, they're human form of life, but not human life. That's why the human form of life is mentioned. Because you don't necessarily use it as human life. You know?
It's interesting how people, they comment, oh, you know, these people behave like animals,
mm-hmm.
but actually animals don't behave like humans. Animals follow the laws of nature.
Yes, yes.
These people don't.
No. Yes. Yes, so that's, yeah, technically they're lower. I think Narottam Das Thakur mentions Dui Pada Pashu. Yeah, but they're worse.
Worse.
Yeah. You know, if you hang out with the dog all day, you know, it's not great association, you know, but you hang out with someone who acts like a dog, that's worse.
I think also the point is that animals, they don't create any karma because they just guided by Paramatma.
Yes.
So it's, you know, it's their nature and then that's what it is.
Yeah, but I say, when they... It means it's by usage that will say they behave like an animal. What we mean is that they're behaving in lower levels of this consciousness here. Five kinds: immoral people, atheists who follow moral principles. So we're saying that they're behaving like the immoral people, because generally the atheists who follow moral principles, they would consider themselves civilized. Even some of those who are immoral, but if they're sophisticated, they'll consider themselves civilized. You know, let's say there's a wine connoisseur. So he is sophisticated in that realm of wine tasting and tell you all the different things and this and that, and he's respected. But he hasn't actually, it's not necessarily he's following any moral principles or accepts the greater society. He is just on the sensual platform, but he's very scientific about it. So even with an anamoy, you have these two divisions. Like that. Then when you come up to the pranamoy, it's atheistic, because even you say, oh, someone believes in God, but the point is the moralism that they follow, who designed that moralism? Is it coming from scriptures, or is it just what's socially acceptable? If it's socially acceptable, that's not coming from God, so it's non-theistic. And non-theistic is also known as atheistic. You know, non-theistic and atheistic is the same thing. So therefore, they're atheistic moralists. Because, you know, you have to do this and all these things that's, you know, that by the contemporary social construct, they'll function that has to do. But they're not understanding is that, yes, moralism is important, but it should be moralism that's established by God, not by us. Does that make sense? There's a difference. You don't see the difference?
No, I see it just... I think it's quite complex because, for example, we've got, you know, these people who will go to such an extent to save one little rabbit crossing the road, and then they're on their way to McDonald's to pig out.
Yes.
And you have people who follow religious principles who will give them the license to kill and the license to eat meat.
Yes, but the point is, where does all that come from? So it's not necessarily, if it's coming from the scripture, then that's another thing. Then that will put them in the third category. But they'll be at lower levels of that. So, because you study something, it's just like in the Gita. You're studying karma yoga on its own, then jnana yoga on its own. Then the fifth chapter, they put karma and jnana together. Then you study jnana yoga on its own. Right? Then bhakti yoga on its own. But in the process of sadhana, using all together. But unless you study the elements separately, you won't know how to combine them. So the difficulty comes is that it's not that when you deal with it that you'll find it in that one category. One aspect is in that category, but another aspect is another. Like the person is theistic, so then you'll deal with that on the level of that third level. But then the point is their moralism may be coming from theology, may not be coming. So then that you'll deal on that level. So you deal with each thing wherever it is.
There's different shapes.
Yes, all just different shapes. Yeah. But, so that's where the difficulty comes in, is that you hear about these things, then you have to accept that that's the way it is, contemplate it, practice it. Then you'll get an understanding. Otherwise, then we've just heard about it and just use it as you know, without really thinking about it. Then it becomes very stiff in the application. So just as those who are traditionalists get very stiff about that, they don't know why. But at the same time as the modernists, they're just as stiff in their understanding, just as different from the there. So they'll say, oh, we're liberal, when they're not. They're just as narrow-minded. It's just you shifted a little bit. So you learn all these things, because otherwise you can have somebody in sadhana bhakti, but their moral compass is atheistic. You know? Does that make sense? So that's the way it doesn't match. They should be using the theistic model. Their sadhana will go so much easier. Their life will be so much more natural. But they mix these things, and so then it's a problem. And it may be just certain aspects are mixed. You know, it's just like on so many issues, then they'll be on the one, and on another, there'll be another. So it's always a funny thing. You know, and so by the modes of nature, different places will have different mixes. So you won't even get any one place is the same. You know, it's like when you cross the, you know, how you say, you know, to the Americas, then they have, at least North America tends to be, they kind of have two modes, either puritanical or hedonistic. And a balance in between is very difficult for them. So it's either no rules at all or totally just rules. There's no understanding that there's something higher. You know, they say, well, you go to Europe, then they can see degrees. But it's just a matter within their particular context how they'll see those degrees. You know what I'm saying? So then, you know, the Christian will see in one way certain things. It has to be. So certain things will be very broad, but other things will be very narrow. Does that make sense? So you're always going to get this particular combination. So it's just a matter of understanding the science by its position, and then it's a matter of then where people fit. Because they might, let's say, socially fit in one category, religiously in another, personally in a different one. You know, it's like they go out and they do really well personally in public. I mean, you know, socially in public, but personally they say, I don't really like it. I remember seeing one lady, her husband was a billionaire. And we were, you know, sitting in the house and, you know, talking about some of the things that we're cooking and this and that. And it came up, and I'm not sure how it came up, but, you know, kind of with the background, where they're from and that. You know, originally it's like Indians all go back to the village somewhere, you know, like that. So she was talking about how, you know, that life is so simple and nice and all that. And she's really good host and dealing and everything like that. And so then, I'm not sure how it came up, but she was mentioning how she personally prefers the simple life. But because, you know, this is the world that her husband has to move in for his occupation, then they do all those things. But when it's just the two of them, they just do everything really simple. You know, no complicated kind of stuff. But when, you know, people come over and they go out, then they have the full sophistication. So you'll have the individual on all different levels may function in different ways because they're conditioned. There's no continuity.
That's the modes of nature,
depending on the modes. But for the liberated soul, you won't find that problem.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura.